Good morning. On behalf of the family of Judge Michael Wilk, I'd like to thank everyone for being here this morning. And as we do, we begin with the words of the Psalms. Adonai ma'adam v'teda'ehu, b'ne'nosh v'techashvehu, adam lehevel dama, yamav k'tseil over, baboker yatsitz v'chalaf, la'erev yemolel v'yavesh. Eternal One, what are we that you have regard for us? What are we that you are mindful of us? We are like a breath. Our days are like a passing shadow. We come and go like grass, which in the morning shoots up renewed, and in the evening fades and withers. You cause us to return to dust, saying, "Return, O mortal creature." Would that we were wise, that we understood whither we are going. For when we die, we carry nothing away. Our glory does not accompany us. Mark the wholehearted and behold the upright. They shall have peace. Adonai, you redeem the souls of your servants, and none who trust in you shall be desolate. Death has taken our beloved Michael Wilk. Our friends grieve in their darkened world. In their silence, there is lamentation. In their tears, there is loneliness. Lost in their sorrow, may they find the presence of loving friends. Hear them, O God, be with them. For Michael's love that united us in life and which death cannot sever. For his companionship that we shared along life's path and which continues through the tenderness of memory. For the gifts of his heart and mind that brought us joy and happiness and is now a precious remembrance. For all these and more, we give our thanks to God. In this time of grief, we listen to the voice of our sacred scriptures that brings us the ever-new message of God's nearness. It tells us of our kinship with the Creator, in light and in darkness, in joy as in sorrow, in life as in death. Continue now with Psalm 23. First I'll chant it in the Hebrew, and then you should have it on the card that was on your chair. We'll join together after the Hebrew, reciting it in the English. Mizmor le David, Adonai hu ilo echsar, bin ot deshe, yarbitzeni, ame menuchot yenachaleni. Nafshi yeshovei, nafshi yeshovei, Yanchini b'ma'aglei tzedek l'ma'an shemo. Gam ki eilech b'geis ha'mavet lo ira. Ki ata imadi shivtcha umishantecha shivtcha umishantecha heima yenachamu. Taruch lefanai shulchan. Taruch lefanai shulchan. Neged sorerai tishanta, tishanta. Shanta Vashem Enro. Kishanta Vashemen Roshi Kosi Revaya Achto Achto Vachesed Irdifuni Irdifuni Kol Yemei Chayai Veshavti Veshavti Beveit Adonai Veshavti Beveit Adonai Le'orech Yamin. Together. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He maketh me to lie down in green pastures. He leadeth me beside the still waters. He restoreth my soul. He leadeth me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for thou art with me. Thy rod and thy staff, they comfort me. Thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Thou anointest my head with oil. My cup runneth over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. In his sorrow, the biblical figure Job cried out, Adonai natan v'adonai lakach yehi shem Adonai mevorach. God has given, God has taken away. Blessed be the name of God. In ancient people, we are well acquainted with grief and the valley of the shadows. Death and sorrow are not strangers to us. Yet the centuries have taught us that a good name endures beyond the grave, and that there is strength in faith. With Job we say today, Adonai Natan, God, you have given. You gave us a loved one who will not be forgotten. For all that was good and enduring in his life, we offer the deepest thanks of our hearts. Adonai Lakach, God, you have taken away. We pray for the strength to turn our broken hearts into an altar of trust before which we acknowledge your sovereignty and your love as we now say, Yehi Shem Adonai Mevorach, blessed be the name of God now and forever. Let us take this moment to pray in silence as we remember Michael Will. May the words of our mouths and the meditations of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O God, our strength and our Redeemer. As we gather here this morning to say our farewells to our beloved friend, Judge Wilk, the setting may seem a bit unusual. If it had been up to Michael, we would be in the sanctuary of Beth Hillel Temple today, but that space could never have accommodated a gathering of this magnitude, could not have embraced so many who have come here today to show their love and respect for the community figure and the man, Judge S. Michael Wilk. I know I speak for the Wilk family when I say how grateful they are to the Boys and Girls Club for the opportunity to honor Judge Wilk's memory in this space today. Most who are here today undoubtedly know that Michael was a lifelong Kenoshan. His parents, Phil and Betty, with whom Michael was always very close, moved to Kenosha as a young couple. Phil was in the auto parts business, and Michael had his earliest work experiences in that store and also in another auto parts business here in town. Michael, as you may not be surprised to hear, was an outstanding student. He was a football player at Bradford. He attended Manitouish Camp and learned to love the great outdoors on wonderful trips to the Boundary Waters during those summers. Toward the end of high school, Michael learned about the Ivy League schools, and he decided that he would reach for that opportunity. He was rewarded with a full ride at Princeton, an experience that changed his life. But you know, it was never about the prestige of being at Princeton for Michael. Rather, it was about how that experience widened his horizons and about the wonderful educational opportunities he received there that set him on a lifelong path of a love of learning. A college advisor saw a future in the legal profession for Michael, who had been a biochemistry major at Princeton. He then attended the University of Michigan Law School, and there he met his beloved wife, Joan. And while Michael had the opportunity to work at a well-known law firm in Chicago, he could tell that Chicago and the high-intensity work of a big law firm, the daily commute and traffic jams, was not for him. He preferred to come home to Kenosha and practice law here, and he found his niche in litigation and specialized in legal work for ski resorts and hospitals. When a new circuit court branch opened up in Kenosha in 1994, Michael decided to pursue a judicial position. And once he started training to be a judge, he knew that this was what he was meant to do. And as much as he had loved his work in the law firm, he cherished his time on the bench even more. He was known as a careful, scholarly, and deliberate judge who gave everyone in the courtroom a chance to tell his or her story. He listened intently and ruled with compassion. He never even used his gavel or even raised his voice once in his 22 years of service on the bench. But Michael's upbringing and his education and his legal profession only tell part of the story of who he was. Above all, he was a family man, and to share some insights about his life from the perspective of his family members, we will now hear from his grandson, Jackson, and then his children, David and Deborah.
Jackson Will, Michael's grandson. I'd like to start by saying that I envy most all of you because you have probably known my grandpa longer than the short 14 years I had with him. My grandpa was a stellar man who was rarely at a loss for words while never speaking meaningless ones. He was a loving husband to Grandma, and he was one of the kindest people you'll ever meet. He was also a very humble man. In fact, I'm sure he can hear us and is ready to shrug off the praise we're giving him, but that's not going to stop us from giving it to him. My grandpa was a great scholar and one of the hardest workers I've ever known. In fact, he only took 3 sick days his entire judicial career and gladly never had to retire from what he loved to do. Grandpa inspired people to do great things. He inspired my father to go into law, which has led to him becoming an elected official. He inspired my aunt to do well in school and become a professor. Grandpa's also inspired me to try my hardest in school and Boy Scouts, which I know will take me far in life. And thanks to Grandpa's encouragement, endless optimism, and patience, my sister Audrey, my cousins Jacob and Simon, and I continue to work on our golf swings, no matter how horrible they may be. Speaking of my fellow grandkids, we recently talked and agreed that one of our favorite memories with Grandpa is Camp G&G, or Camp Grandma and Grandpa, an annual summer camp put on by our grandparents. We always love golfing with, swimming with, playing with, and eating donuts with our grandparents. Without Grandpa, though, this year will be different. Someone else will have to get the donuts. Someone else will drive the second car. Someone else will have to be the voice of reason. But just because he can't do those things doesn't mean he won't be there with us. He'll be there, and he'll be having the time of his life. Grandpa was a loving and supportive grandfather, so much that I was the envy of my friends. I remember one day recently, when I didn't have school, my grandpa took my friend and I to lunch. After lunch, great conversation and a tour of the courthouse, my friend told me that he is like the grandpa he never had. My grandpa had many friends. He was probably my dad's best friend. Daddy, I'm sorry you lost your best friend, but I think that Grandpa has taught me enough that I can step up. I'm not surprised by how many people are here and how many have expressed their grief since my grandpa died. I have never once met anyone with anything bad to say about him, only praise and admiration, which is no doubt because of his unwavering kind treatment of everyone he met. While thinking of what to say today, I sifted through the numerous caring and thoughtful social media posts, and I came across a quote that I really enjoyed about what it was like to converse with my grandpa. The person said that it felt like he was letting them in on something big and important. It's true. By the way he treated others throughout his life, Grandpa was letting us all in on something big and important. That is, we all have an impact on those around us, and it's up to us to make sure it's a positive one. So be kind to each other, care about each other, just like my grandpa. Thank you.
That. I must confess the enormous struggle that I've had in preparing my remarks, how to choose words to explain my dad and to honor him. A dear friend recommended that I merely make a list of every good and positive adjective that I could think of and string them together, and that might begin to describe him. Due to his position as a judge, he is referred to as the Honorable S. Michael Wilk. But what does it mean to be honorable? Merriam-Webster tells us that synonyms of honorable are honest, moral, ethical, principled, righteous, decent, respectable, virtuous, good, fair, truthful, trustworthy, dependable, and just. That would seem to be a good start in describing my dad. My father earned the title honorable by election, but his actions and interactions, his relationships and commitments, his selfless and silent dedication and contributions to his community, his keen wit and curious mind, his belief held truly and deeply and to his essence and core in the concepts of fairness and justice and hope and mercy and rehabilitation and redemption, teach us that even in the absence of title, he was an honorable man. As social media reacted to my father's passing, I was taken by the depth and breadth and span of the feelings expressed. There was grief and sorrow from friends, statements of appreciation from couples he had married, gratitude from people to whom he had shown compassion and understanding and mercy, funny and touching stories of ski trips and Lambo adventures, of long-ago escapades from his high school classmates, and countless expressions of love, understanding, sadness, and hope. In the last week of his life, my family had the opportunity to sit with my father, tell him how much we loved him, laughed and cried with him, and held his hands. And I've thought a lot about those hands. They were soft and strong, gentle and steady hands. The hands of a builder, not of bricks and mortar, steel and wood, but builder of community, of home, and of love. They were hands that let you fall just far enough to learn, but never far enough to cause lasting harm. Hands that guided and supported, but never pushed. Hands that baked pies and skipped stones, paddled canoes and steered sailboats. Hands that bandaged knees and applauded plays and concerts. Hands that as a young boy enveloped my hand in a strong and reassuring and loving grip. They were hands that helped forge our community, hands that broke ground for the Kenosha Ice Arena, the Parkside Dormitories, Lakeside Towers, and the harbor development. They were hands that were just, hands that have written decisions filled with compassion and wisdom and impeccable scholarship, hands that have signed divorce judgments and adoption orders and marriage licenses. They were hands that wrote speeches on restaurant placemats, and hands that with a simple "love, Dad" on a yellow sticky note reminded me that in every moment I was loved. They were my dad's hands, and I miss them now and will miss them always. I wanted to close my remarks by telling you a particularly poignant story or share with you a uniquely meaningful exchange, but that's impossible for me. I can't give you a greatest hits list when I have loved every song. I will tell you that I have loved every second of every minute of every day as his son and friend. He has made me a better man, husband, father, lawyer, and judge. He taught me how to think critically, to care passionately, to judge compassionately, to parent patiently, to listen carefully, to question thoughtfully. And he taught me how to love unapologetically and unconditionally. My dad was a good, steady, and gentle man, a decent man. He was an honorable man.
Special, so I'm not surprised that others thought so too. But my family and I are overwhelmed by the outpouring of love and the stories about my dad. When my dad was in the hospital last week, I told him three stories and we both cried. And I want to share them with you because I think they encapsulate a little bit of what it was like to be his daughter. In 1990, when I was living in San Francisco, my dad, who was still a lawyer, flew in for a deposition but had to depart that night, leaving us a very brief window to meet for dinner. But my dad, we called him the eternal optimist, he was sure there was time to squeeze in a really good meal and still catch the red eye We met at Zuni Cafe, he arrived by taxi, and we had a typical Wilk meal, full of laughs and great conversations. Throughout dinner, I kept telling him he was never going to make his flight. But he insisted the taxi driver who dropped him off was waiting for his call and would be back to pick him up when he was done with dinner. I told him, it doesn't really work that way, Dad. This is the big city. Cabs don't just come to get you when you want them. Dinner ended, and he made a phone call. This was before cell phones, so I don't even know how that happened or how the cabbie received the call. But sure enough, the cab arrived a few minutes later, and the driver jumped out to get my dad's bag, saying, Michael, I had to throw a woman out of my cab to come back and get you. My dad and I proceeded to hug and kiss and tell each other how much we loved each other, and there was probably another round of hugs and kisses and I love yous, and maybe even another. We call this the Wilk goodbye. And the cabbie turned to us and put his hands to his cheeks, and he said, with incredible tenderness, oh, the relationship, it's so good. And it was. My second story is actually two stories that make the same point about my father. When I was home from college, we would often meet for a garbage plate at Frank's Diner, and inevitably, he would pull his pen out of his pocket to help me with a decision, pick up a napkin, and make what he called a life list, writing down all the pros and cons of whatever decision we were discussing, never telling me what to do, but always helping me think through the options and giving me the tools to make a good decision for myself. This is related to how deeply meaningful it has been to me and my family, and probably everyone who ever met him, how genuinely interested he was in what we did and who we are. He was completely present with each of us as individuals. I told him how significant it was to me, and also what a pleasure it was to watch him do this with my children and his grandchildren. Whether it was talking with my son Jacob about skiing, backcountry expeditions, the right boots, or Camp Manitouish, or with my son Simon talking about art, England, or golf, or making pies and pizza from scratch, my dad delighted in the unique interests and personalities of all of us. To connect with me, he would seek out art museums when he traveled, but he didn't go to the easy exhibits. He'd find the most difficult work, and then he'd call me, or he'd buy me the catalog, and we'd have long conversations about it. He took a genuine interest in everything we did. What I want you to know is the connection that many of you felt, the sense that you were important to him, that he was genuinely interested in you and that he cared about you, was authentic, because that's who he was. My dad taught me so many things, and the last story encapsulates the kind of love and commitment he gave to me, to my brother, and to our children. When I was little, he taught me how to throw a perfect spiral. We would spend hours throwing the football on the sidewalk in front of our house. He carefully showed me where to put my fingers on the laces, how to point my left arm in the direction I wanted the ball to travel, where to position my right hand relative to my ear, when to let go of the ball. It's a skill that still makes me think of his love and patience each time I toss the ball in Southport Park at our annual Thanksgiving game or with my family in my own driveway. All these stories, I think, come together in my father's final words. His love, his patience, his optimism, his thinking more about others than himself. He said, I love you. It's going to be okay.
Thank you, Jackson and David and Deborah, for sharing these beautiful memories and thoughts. In the beloved book of Proverbs from Jewish tradition that's called Pirkei Avot, or the Sayings of the Fathers, we find the following maxim. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said to his disciples, consider well the good that one should seek. In response, each of his disciples had a different answer. Rabbi Eliezer said that the good one should seek is a kindly eye. Rabbi Joshua said, seek a good friend. Rabbi Yose, a good neighbor. Rabbi Shimon said to seek foresight. And Rabbi Elazar, a good heart. It's the rare individual who embodies all of these types of goodness, and Michael Wilk was one of them. Anyone who knew Michael well, or perhaps even someone who only knew him once, whether in his earliest years growing up here in Kenosha or his recent years on the bench, would recognize him as someone with a kindly eye. Michael always showed great kindness to the person who was right in front of him, as was mentioned already. He was naturally curious, asking questions with genuine interest, and would find a way to make a connection with every person he met, without regard to their age or their station in life. His kindness and generosity showed through in all of these interactions, even from that somewhat imposing position of the bench in the court. Michael also was a good friend. And I know there are many, many people here today who considered him a good friend. And these friendships linked back to many periods in his life. He kept up friendships with people that went back to high school, college, camp, law school. In Kenosha, his many local involvements, be they with the law firm, the judiciary, the clubs and organizations of which he was a part, his work on ski patrol, or with the Slugs golf group, or sailing, all of these led to substantial friendships. He was not only a colleague, not only a co-worker or a golf buddy, he was to so many a true friend. To say that Michael was a good neighbor goes way beyond the simple definition of neighbor. While he was certainly beloved in the Southport Park neighborhood, where he and Joan made their home for over four decades, it was Michael's love of Kenosha and his volunteerism on behalf of countless causes in this community that made him a truly outstanding neighbor. Whether it be the Downtown Rotary Club, where I was privileged to be Michael's guest on more than one occasion, or the Bradford Alumni Association, UW Parkside in Carthage, or community development projects, be it the Symphony Board or the Bar Association, Wilmot Mountain Ski Patrol or Beth Hillel Temple, and of course this is only a partial list, Michael was the best kind of neighbor. He was a person who really loved and cared about his community, took on leadership when needed, held out a vision for and constantly worked to make this community better. Michael was also gifted with the characteristic of foresight mentioned in the proverb. He was a great planner and organizer, and he always thought ahead about safety, be it while sailing on Lake Michigan, patrolling the slopes at Wilmot, or making sure that his grandchildren had the best helmets and equipment for their sport activities. And when he and Joan were given a check as a wedding gift with the idea that they would buy a refrigerator, Michael saw that that gift could be much better used to fund a once-in-a-lifetime two-month trip to Europe before they settled down to work and family in Kenosha. Now that's foresight. In addition, Michael's foresight led him to share his wisdom and his counsel with many about how to face the future. As Deborah mentioned and David mentioned, whether that was talking to his own kids or giving a ruling from the bench or just advising some other young person about what might be the next steps forward. And finally, Michael had the blessing of a good heart. The characteristic that Rabbi Yochanan said encompassed all the others. Michael was known to all as gentle and loving, who always had those exuberant hugs and kisses for his children and grandchildren. He welcomed his son-in-law and daughter-in-law into the family with open arms. He spent time with each grandchild, developing a different relationship with each one. He was as generous with his words as he was with his embraces, always telling his family members that he loved them and was proud of them. As much as we in the community weep for the loss of this fine community servant and favorite son of Kenosha, we cannot begin to measure the depth of the bereavement of Michael's dear family. Michael's sister Judy and brother-in-law Fred, to brother-in-law Rob in Spain and the nieces and nephews, to the grandchildren Jacob and Simon, Jackson and Audrey, to son David and daughter-in-law Lynn, to daughter Deborah and son-in-law Stephen. Our hearts go out to you because we know that there is now a deep chasm where Michael stood in your lives that will never be fully closed. And Joan, what can we say to you? You have not only lost a partner of 53 years, but a soulmate, a constant source of creative romance in your life, the man that you knew would be your life partner from your very first date. Those of us who watched and admired the two of you as a couple over the years could see that yours was a deeply connected and loving relationship. And we cannot hope to comfort you in your loss, but we can be present to let you know that you are not alone. Perhaps we can take some comfort in knowing that Judge Wilk touched the lives of every person in this room and well beyond with his kindly eye, that he was a good friend and a good neighbor, a man of foresight and in possession of a good heart. In these many ways, he endeared himself to his loved ones and to this community, and for that we are so very grateful. Zichrono livracha, may his memory serve as a blessing. In the rising of the sun and in its going down, we will remember him. In the blowing of the wind and in the chill of winter, we will remember him. In the opening of buds and in the rebirth of spring, we will remember him. In the rustling of leaves and in the beauty of autumn, we will remember him. In the beginning of the year and when it ends, we will remember him. When we are weary and in need of strength, we will remember him. When we are lost and sick at heart, we will remember him. When we have joys we yearn to share, we will remember him. So long as we live, he too shall live, for he is now a part of us as we remember him. May the memory of Michael Wilk endure among us as a blessing. In your own time, O God, when we too were called to enter eternity, may we leave this life secure in the faith that in your light we shall see light. In life and in death, we cannot go where you are not, and where you are, hope endures. Sustained by this assurance, we invoke your name, Almighty God. I'd like to ask those who are able to please rise. As I now chant the traditional memorial prayer, El Malei Rachamin, which I will translate afterward. El Malei Rachamin, Shochen Mamromim, Hamse Menuchan Chona, Tachat Kanfei Hashchina, Im Kedoshim Motehorim, Kezohar Harakia Mazhirim. Et Nishmat Yisrael Mordechai Ben Shreigot, Shreigot Vebeti, Shehalach Leolamo, Baal Harachamim, Yastirehu, Bitzror, bitzror, hachayim et nishmato, Adonai hu nachalato. V'yanuach b'shalom al mishkavo, v'enomah. compassionate God, eternal spirit of the universe, grant perfect rest in your sheltering presence to Michael Wilk, Yisrael Mordechai ben Schreiger Vebedi, who has entered eternity. O God of mercy, let him find refuge in your eternal presence, and let his soul be bound up in the bond of eternal life. God is his inheritance. May he rest in peace, and let us say, Amen. This concludes our service here.